Here in Australia, we have a wealth of birds to see. People come from all over the world to see them. We celebrate our furry natives here, but less so our feathered ones, and I really don't understand why. So here on Evenings on ABC Sydney, Canberra, New South Wales, you are about to help spread the word and start a bird nerd revolution that can only enrich your life. Each week on Tuesday at 9:30, we are going bird watching.
I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
It's going to be a gentle entry for you. We are going to start with birds you probably know, so you can join the conversation. 1300 222 702 is the number. Or you can text us on 0467 922 702. And educating us tonight is the editor of Australian BirdLife magazine, Sean Dooley. Sean, thanks for joining us on Evenings.
It's my pleasure to be a guest on Barthy's Bird Club. I'm very honoured.
That's a great name for it. That's fantastic, okay? Barthy's Bird Club it is. Fantastic. Brilliant. Okay, great. Our work is done here.
Yes,
my executive producer's nodding, going, yes, yes, fantastic, fantastic. Now, a little bit later we're going to talk about the rediscovery of an Australian bird that you've said is pretty much like finding out Elvis is still alive. But first, just so that everyone can join the conversation, let's start with a bird everyone knows, the magpie. They get such a bad rap.
They do, and I think that's partly a hangover. Well, obviously their swooping is fairly notorious and can be quite frightening. I love magpies, and even I've been swooped, and I kind of feel a bit betrayed whenever a magpie swoops me. It's like, don't you know I'm on your side? but it's also the hang up from England, because when the first settlers got here, they saw these black and white birds that were quite bold and cheeky and waddled around with their sort of pot belly gait, and they reminded them of a black and white bird in England, which is the English magpie, which isn't in any way related to the Australian ones. The Australian magpies are actually in the butcher bird family, and their nearest relatives are wood swallows, but they just happen to look slightly like English magpies, so they got called magpies. And there's a whole lot of folklore associated with the English magpies. The whole idea of the thieving magpie has permeated into our culture, but that's actually not, you know, Australian magpies aren't thieves in that sense that the English magpies were renowned for nicking, you know, sixpence and anything shiny and stuff like that. So I think we've got a bit of cultural baggage there, but they are magnificent birds, I think. And you say they've got a lot of bad press, but I do know that people love them, and at BirdLife Australia we ran a national bird vote a couple of years ago to vote for your favourite bird, and the magpie came in at number two. So there's a lot of love for magpies as well.
Well, they have such, here they are, beautiful song. You know, that just says to me, morning in Australia, that song,
yeah.
That sound.
I think if anyone's ever had grown up in the bush or had relatives in the country that you visit, that song just wakens you up, and it's so evocative every time you hear it. And they're in the suburbs too. They do a really good job of adapting to the conditions we've thrown. They're one of the few native birds that's prospered under our alteration to the landscape. And also that call, Chris, I've got musician friends who've been intrigued by the magpie call. It's actually one of the most complex calls in all of nature, the most complex sounds. The magpies have a double vocal cord. It's called a syrinx. They don't have a larynx. The technical terms are syrinx. And they're like those sort of Tibetan throat singers on steroids. They kind of double track their call. And if musician friends have slowed down the call and played it to me, and you can hear one side of the call is actually this deep bass sort of click track, and then they lay down the melody over the top and create this really complex sound.
Do all magpies have the same call?
It's they all have the same basic call, but the variations, I think it's something like, I think I read like up to 200 different song variations across, and some magpies have multiple, like dozens of different ways of tweaking their call. So you'll find it's interesting if you go to the other side of the country, say around Perth or down in Hobart, the magpies do sound a little different, slightly different tone and a little bit of a different structure to the song. So they're really versatile. And interestingly, it's not just the male magpie that sings. That's the male magpie that swoops, but it's not just the male magpie that sings. And if anyone has a local set of magpies that you feed or that get to know you, often they will almost perform for you, both of them, male and female. They just throw their heads back in that glorious carolling. It's just such a wonderful sound.
Well, if you're listening, have you had that experience? You know, do the magpies come and sing for you? Give us a call, 1300 222 702. Have you made friends with local magpies? Michael's called in from the Central Coast, Sean. Michael, you have a family of four magpies near you.
Yeah, I have mum and dad and two young ones, and they come every afternoon to be fed. And if I'm not here to feed them, the mother sits at the front door and warbles to me, say, get out of here.
How long have they been there, Michael?
Oh, over 12 months.
And what do you feed them?
Mince.
And the babies as well?
They're still relying upon the mother to feed them, but they're too lazy. They're grown up enough now. They could feed themselves, but they don't.
Okay. Thanks for that, Michael. Sean?
Yeah, definitely. I know a lot of people have that kind of relationship with their magpie in their local territory. And Michael is doing exactly the right thing. If you are going to feed wild birds, you need to feed them as close to natural food as possible. I mean, the worst thing you can do is to encourage feeding birds and feed them junk food. So for magpies, they're scavengers. They're omnivores, but they will tend to eat meat. They'll also eat, you know, fruit, seeds, whatever they can get, really. But they do prefer meat. So if you are going to feed them meat, don't give them, sort of salty bacon or something like that. It's like just, as close to just raw meat as possible. So minced meat's probably a good option there.
So minced, like Michael's doing on the Central Coast. Somebody also, thanks for the call, by the way, Michael. Somebody also told me that you could go to a pet shop and buy this stuff called insectivore and mix it in with the mince if you want to feed magpies. It's good for them.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's quite possibly so, just to give them a bit of a variation in the nutrients and, sort of... In the wild, a magpie very rarely gets to feed on a tray of mince, so it's probably good to mix it up.
Funny that. Paul's called in. Paul, you've got a question for Sean. Welcome to Evenings.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, Sean, we have local resident magpies, but I'm trying to discern if it's the magpie's early morning bird song or if it's a native Australian pigeon. We're at Little Bay in Sydney. And it's just like this really incredible bell sound early in the morning.
Okay, and it's just a single note?
Oh, there's a question. Yes. Any ideas, Sean?
Possibly. I mean, one of the early names for magpies was the bell magpie that the early settlers had for it, because their carolling can ring out like a bell. And I know in the area where I live in Melbourne, they have a call that reminds me of a scanner at a supermarket, you know, at that beep-doop, beep-doop sort of call as you're taking your product through the barcode scanner. And so they can have this sort of solitary note. So that may have been what Paul was hearing. But there's also the magpie's little cousin, the grey butcher bird, which is sort of a lot of people mistake for a miniature kookaburra, but they're like a magpie, but with about half the size, and they're grey and black and white. And they have got the most beautiful silvery call as well. So it could potentially be one of those as well.
Well, hopefully that's answered the question for you, Paul. Kevin's called in. Kevin, you've got magpies near you in Port Macquarie?
Yep. The reason I rang him was because I remember years ago when one of my daughters was going down to one of the primary schools, there was an albino one down there. But I noticed that I was going for a run the other day, and there was two up near the school, and they were sort of, I wouldn't call them black and white, they were sort of white and white, but you could still see that they had different tones. Do you get that often?
It's unusual, but you do see probably we get reports at BirdLife Australia. A lot of people send in their unusual sightings to us or call us up to say they've seen something. And more often than not, if somebody's seen an albino bird or an all-black bird, it tends to be the magpie. Now, I don't know whether that's because magpies are more common. And so we tend to, if there are these sort of genetic mutations, which is what these things are, then they crop up more because there's just more of them. Or perhaps magpies themselves are better able to cope. Often those birds that are albinos or melanistic, is another term for one of those colour changes, those birds obviously sometimes stick out and they're more obvious to predators, and the others of its type might turn against it. Whereas magpies, I suspect, are big and tough and rough enough to be able to handle themselves, and so they might survive a lot better than other birds do. So it's still pretty unusual, Kevin, but it is recorded more frequently in magpies than almost any other bird.
Well, Kevin, thanks for calling in.
Cheers.
That's Kevin in Port Macquarie. We're talking to Sean Dooley, the editor of BirdLife Australia, in the new segment that he has named Barthy's Bird Club, and tonight we're talking about these birds. Now, Sean, is it true that if you feed magpies, if you talk to them, they'll stop swooping?
Yeah, there's some really fantastic work being done out of Griffith Uni in Queensland, led by Professor Daryl Jones, and they've studied magpies in urban settings and where people live. And the stuff that his team's uncovered is quite incredible. And including I think CSIRO have done experiments on what method you can use to stop magpies swooping. And that people say you put the eyes on the back of, draw eyes on your back of your crash, your bike helmet, so that they don't like to swoop if they think that you're looking at them. And other people put those big plastic cable ties so they look like they've got riding around with a giant hedgehog on their head. Those things sort of, it's a bit equivocal whether they actually work. I think the CSIRO study showed you needed those cable ties to be about 2 foot long to guarantee the magpie didn't swoop. But Daryl's research shows that the only 100% effective way is that if you feed your local magpies, they get to know you and trust you. And so the only reason that the male magpie swoops is when it's got young in the nest and it's protecting them from what it perceives as a threat. And the research shows that only about 10% of the male magpies actually do swoop. And that's probably because they've been imprinted some negative experience with people where they see the people as a threat. And what the research has also shown is that magpies can actually, they're really smart birds, and they can identify something up to 100 individual faces of the people in the neighbourhood. So if you think a magpie is actually seems to pick on you, it probably is. It's probably worked out that for some reason you're deemed a threat.
Can you start feeding it and make friends with it?
Well, that's probably the only way you're going to get out of that. The other thing that the research has shown is that most magpies, there are just psycho magpies who are just ultra aggressive and swoop everything. But most individual magpies will only swoop one type of person. So if a magpie swoops cyclists, they rarely swoop pedestrians as well. Or if one swoops dogs, it won't often swoop the people that are walking the dogs. So that they're very discerning. And we think that in the cities, the problem is if you've got more than 100 people, they can't recognise everybody. So they just pick on stereotypes. So I find it interesting that most people with the stature and frame of, I reckon, a 10-year-old boy are more likely to get swooped, because that's probably the type of person that most often throws sticks at magpies.
We're talking to Sean Dooley, the editor of BirdLife Australia, about magpies tonight. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1300 222 702 is the number. Mark's called in from Nullo Mountain. That's near Ryleston in, the Central Tablelands?
Yes.
Near Lithgow? Bathurst?
Not far from Lithgow, at Ryleston, yeah. It's between Lithgow and Mudgee.
Mark, what's your experience of magpies?
We rescued one a couple of years ago, and she couldn't be released because she's got a damaged wing and leg. But we rehabilitated the leg but couldn't get the wing sorted out. So she lives with us just on the on the kitchen breakfast bar, and she's got a couple of enclosures. We bring her in of a night because we've got quolls here. We're on the Nullo Mountain. But she likes to have her belly rubbed, and she watches us with the dogs and pretty much expects the same, you know. If they get something to a treat, she wants a treat as well. She likes to have a belly rubbed, yeah.
Thanks for that, Mark. Is it true that magpies can and look at that sort of preferential treatment, Sean, and say, hey, I want a bit of that?
Yeah, definitely. They're very social birds. They tend to pair up, not usually for life, but they will replace their partners if one's a dud. and they often have last year's brood with them for a lot of the next year, and then kick them out when they start nesting again. So they're quite social birds, and you'll find, especially outside breeding season or even during breeding season, all the male magpies that haven't managed to hook up with a female in a territory, they tend to just gather together, and they do have a pecking order, excuse the pun, and so that they do that. And there's a fabulous, I think it's a book as well, but there was a website called Penguin Bloom. It was a magpie that was adopted by a family who'd gone through some personal health crises, and this magpie sort of adopted them, and the photos that they have of the magpie interacting with their family are just some of the most gorgeous things you've ever seen, and really touching, that kind of connection. And this kind of crazy little magpie just completely turned this family's sort of fortunes around in terms of their outlook. It's just such a beautiful, touching story. So they are really intelligent animals that we really should give a lot more credit to.
Mark's called in from Yass. Mark, you've rescued a magpie as well.
Well, rescued a magpie on the golf course, walked up playing golf, saw it on the ground, came back the next hole and left it there for a while. Thought, oh, I don't know why. I didn't think I should do it, but did it. Anyway, brought it home, had it in a box inside. Eventually it was getting stronger and all the rest of it. Put it in the box outside, and our local magpies started coming in and feeding it and literally adopted it. It was amazing. It was amazing. We watched it, and it couldn't fly, and it followed these magpies, and then they came and put it in under some plants right next to our house so that we'd find it of an evening and put it inside. It was incredible. It was amazing.
So is that possible, Sean? I mean, that seems extraordinary for a bird to not sense a weakness in another bird and attack it, but instead befriend it and look after it.
It does. And there was a study published just last year which showed magpies are quite distinct birds. With most birds, territorial birds, if the for instance, if the pair are mated and the male bird dies, often the female will mate with another male, will come into the territory and take over the territory. And in most species, if that female has chicks, the male bird will kill the chicks because they're not his. However, there's just a paper published last year, actually, showing instances where there was a pair of magpies. The male magpie was killed for whatever reason, hit by a car or something. Another male came in and took over the territory and joined the female, and immediately began feeding the young of that female bird, which for most other species would never happen. So obviously they have a very strong paternal or maternal instincts, and I think that's because the young often stay with the parents, so it probably helps them to defend the territory later on. But it just goes to show that story of Mark's is certainly within, like, scientists have recorded very similar behaviour.
Well, thanks for the call, Mark. Rod, you've got a question for Sean?
Yeah, I'm an interstate truck driver, and we see, of course, a lot of birds on the road, and there are different behaviours with them, but a lot of them get hit on the road. And you know about the roo whistles. We've got the little ultrasonic whistles that supposedly keep the roos away.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to know whether anything's been done to protect birds. Like, owls are a real problem. They'll sit on the guidepost and wait until you get there and then smash into your windscreen. Some birds that are eating roadkill, some are quicker to move than the others. And, of course, there's been stories of eagles out on the Nullarbor that are so heavily there, they're a bit hard to get away. And I wondered about your advice on either blowing the horn or whether there's something that we could do to stop so many of them being killed by vehicles on the road.
Well, thanks for that, Rod. Sean?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Rod. The I think certainly blowing the horn as you approach is the thing to do. I don't know whether those roo scaring devices actually work for birds. There was a study in France actually a couple of years ago that showed that birds are pretty good. They do. There's a bit of natural selection going on. The ones that do survive the roads, they looked at this on highways and different roads in France. And when birds are fairly good at judging the average speed of a car, so and they work out when to fly off from if they're say feeding on something dead by the side of the road or feeding on some grain on the road, something like that, that they actually start to get a sense of how fast the cars normally travel. And so the problem is when people travel at different speeds on the same road, that's when you get a higher incidence of roadkill. So it doesn't necessarily matter how fast you're going. If all those cars are travelling fast at the same speed, then the rate of road deaths is not particularly, it's not sort of correlated higher with how fast you're going. It's how much variation within speed of the one road. So there's another reason to tie in with the road safety message. So, you know, just keep the same speed and then you can, you're going to hit less birds, apparently.
Hopefully that answers that question. Now, before we let you go, Sean, just quickly, yes. We have to talk about this bird. Tell us why this is so exciting and what this bird is.
Well, that little two-note call and those few calls that you heard, that might not sound like much to people, but for people in the know, that is such an incredible sound to hear. That's the sound of the night parrot, which is an almost mythical bird that people thought for many years was extinct. There was no confirmed 100% confirmed live record since 1912 until a couple of years ago when a Queensland naturalist called John Young managed to get some photographs and video footage of night parrots in Western Queensland. And now there's two populations in Western Queensland that are now known, and the Bush Heritage Australia and Australian Wildlife Conservancy are managing those properties to try and protect the night parrots. And the team working on night parrots have now just released over the weekend this series of calls so that we can all hear what a night parrot sounds like, because no one had ever heard that before. And so now birdwatchers have wanted to see this bird for years. It's driven Twitches crazy, like, you know, going out into the desert looking for this parrot, that this mythical bird that supposedly only comes out at night. And that turns out to be the case. They're only active at night in the most sort of hostile spinifex clad deserts. And now that we have people know what to listen for, there's every chance that we'll be able to go out at night into the desert and listen and potentially find new populations of a bird that really people weren't sure was extinct or not.
So exciting. Sean Dooley from BirdLife Australia, thank you so much for joining us for the inaugural Barthes Bird Club, and thank you for the name as well.
It's been a pleasure, Chris.